Wisconsin lost a record-breaking percentage of dairy farms in 2018. The year before, Western Wisconsin led the state in the number of farm bankruptcies. It's been tough going for all of agriculture, but the dairy industry specifically has faced some unique challenges that have forced many to get out of the business. This hour, we'll talk about how the dairy industry here in Western Wisconsin is faring today and what 2019 may bring for farmers. You're listening to The West Side. Thank you for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. I'm Rich Kramer. I'm joined by three guests for the discussion today and possibly a fourth. First, joining us by phone is Mark Stevenson. He is the Director of Dairy Policy Analysis at UW-Madison. He conducts research and outreach work within the dairy industry and joins us by phone. Mark Stevenson, welcome to the West Side.
Well, good morning. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you. And also joining me in the studio is Joe Brager. He is a Buffalo County farmer as a member of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation Board of Directors. He represents Eau Claire, Buffalo, Trempealeau, La Crosse, Jackson, and Monroe counties. Joe Brager, welcome back to the West Side.
Very happy to be here.
Good to have you. And Mark Hagedorn is the UW Extension Agriculture Agent for Eau Claire County. He has a long personal history in farming, from studying dairy and animal sciences to serving as Brown County Ag Educator before coming to Eau Claire. Mark Hagedorn, welcome back to the West Side.
Thanks, Rich. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And we've also reached out to Brittany Olson of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. She's a dairy farmer herself and has written about topics such as mental health among farmers and women in farming. We do hope to hear from her. And if you're out there, Brittany, and you hear this, you can call in at 800-228-5615. That also goes for our listeners. If you, whether you're in the industry or not, give us a call and let us know what you think. There's a lot of topics, and we've only got an hour to discuss them, but we will work through the issues as best we can. So 1-800-228-5615. So let me start with Mark Stevenson here. Basically, you know, we heard these stories about a record-breaking percentage of dairy farms closing down. So, in a nutshell, why is that?
Well, we are through 4 years of relatively low milk prices, and we've come to expect price cycles in the dairy industry, years when it's been very good, like 2014, and we expect downturns, even extremely bad years like 2009 was. But what we've seen this time around is that the depth of the plunge in prices was not as deep, but it's been persistent. Normally it's been a year and a half, and this time we're going into our fifth year now of low milk prices. So farms have exhausted those safety supplies that they've had of cash or ready access to assets like feed that they may have stored or fertilizer a little bit additionally. And it's causing a lot of financial stress on dairy farms.
Well, absolutely. So, I mean, what kind of things go into the price? I mean, because I know the price is what I pay for a gallon of milk at the grocery store, but I imagine you're talking about something very different here.
Yes, the farm price for milk, at least starting point, is calculated by federal milk marketing orders, and that begins with a weekly survey that's done of wholesale prices for dairy products like cheddar cheese and butter, non-fat dry milk, and even dried whey, a byproduct of cheese making. Those calculate our minimum prices for milk. So as those product prices move, so does our milk price move. And we've seen those product prices be down for quite a period of time, in no small part recently because of exports of dairy products. The U.S. has become a big exporter in world markets, and when we don't export as much, we simply aren't able to retain our prices as well.
Do you have any idea generally, you know, from a statewide perspective, what percentage of our milk or dairy products go outside of the U.S. are exported?
It's awfully hard to tell from just a state perspective, but, you know, we all contribute to this U.S. domestic market, and those products are exported. And from the U.S. standpoint, it would have been normal for us to be around 17 or 18% of our milk production that's exported now. That's been growing over the years, but it's been pushed back to 15 to 16%. And just that little bit of additional product staying here at home pushes down on these prices quite significantly.
Now, let me get the more local perspective, and I'll go to Joe Brager. As far as, you know, you produce the milk, you have buyers that pick it up. Do you have any idea where it goes or whether it's going outside the U.S. or whether it's being made into cheese, cream, butter, et cetera?
Well, to the extent of our milk goes into butter, to the extent of how much of that directly is exported, I have no definite answer on that. But typically, I always figure that about, 15% for a long time was kind of a nice little average we were at, exports. 85% of it used domestically then, and there's roughly, question you always get, well, how much is imported? But if you look at some of those charts, that's been relatively flat for a long time at around 3.6%. You know, the 18% that was Mark just mentioned, that was close to record setting for this year. Oftentimes there's quite a bit of other outside influence that comes into play. The value of the dollar, of course, the price of our product with the prices being depressed, it also helps to make it easier to export. And then you look at some believe that there was probably some buying up of product earlier in the year prior to tariffs being installed. So there's a lot of global factors that come into play on that export side of the market. But that, you know, U.S. Dairy Export Council, I believe they're shooting for 20 by 25 to get up to a 20%. Mm-hmm. But then you look at our production increases, oftentimes 1.5% per year. In that range, we've got a lot of work to do on exports if we expect exports to handle the brunt of that. We've got quite a mountain. We've got a lot of supply out there that we have to work through, and that might be one of the big issues that we have is just the supply that is out there.
Well, and that's, I keep reading about this glut of milk, and Mark Hagedorn, could you help me understand, I mean, when we talk about a glut, how does this happen, and how much is it driving down prices?
Well, I think maybe the most introspective way to look at things, at least here on a statewide basis, is our infrastructure is set and driven by cheese production. Mm-hmm. I think, and Mark Stevenson can maybe help me out a little bit on this, but about 90% of Wisconsin's milk is turned into cheese. And a great deal of that is sent out of across our state borders. Mm-hmm. So the concept of fluid milk is a little bit of a moving target because so much of it is processed out of state and brought back into Wisconsin. Mm. And you start doing the math, looking at what a gallon of milk sells for, reverse engineer it to what the dairy farmer is receiving, and the prices have started to catch up a little bit. But there for a while, there was a pretty good-sized gap. And for a lot of us, Joe, myself, we'd sort of shake our heads a little bit as we saw what the spread was between grocery store and dairy farmer. And then you also understand that there's a lot of freight involved in this. And mm-hmm. hauling fluid milk around is an expensive venture. That's why butter and cheese are a popular commodity because they can be stored and more easily exported.
I see. Joe Brager.
Mark might be able to fill us in a little bit. Oftentimes we joke there's probably only two people that ever understood how milk is really actually priced, and I think we're lucky enough to have Mark here. Mark, without getting too deep, do you want to explain a little bit of, you know, we just talked about fluid milk and the class and how that works a little bit, kind of 10,000-foot view?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Mark Stevenson.
Well, I'll give it a shot. Maybe I just back up quickly and just say, why do we do this at all? I mean, why do we have to have somebody tell us what the price is? And we did it because we had a lot of unusual price pressures in the marketplace back in the early 1900s. And by the time we got into the 1930s, we decided that this was a destructive competition in the marketplace that was causing problems for price. And so the government came in not to absolutely determine prices, but to kind of play traffic cop in there and make sure that everybody was playing fair. And so they describe what the minimum price for milk is going to be every month. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, the way they do it now is to look at the value of these products that are bought and sold without restriction at all in a marketplace, wholesale prices for finished dairy products. And they, as Mark Hagedorn mentioned, reverse engineer those prices to impute what they think the value of milk going into those products must have been. And then they go back and they make sure that plants are paying at least that much. They're welcome to pay more, and they often do with some premiums, but the premiums are a little bit smaller right now as well. So it's a little bit of a complicated system, but it's worked well for, you know, 60 years and more.
So here comes the super layman here. If prices are low, if there's all these factors, why doesn't the government just set higher prices so that the farmers can be better taken care of? Why isn't it that simple?
Well, I think the simple answer to that is that markets have to clear.
Yep.
And if we have high enough prices, there's no signals coming back to dairy farmers that are telling them, we've got enough milk now, and we would end up producing a lot more product than the marketplace can use at all. And that becomes a real problem. So the real issue in setting minimum prices is to set the minimums too high. So a federal government tries to make sure that it's set somewhere just below a market clearing level and that premiums can fill in the gap to get as much milk as plants need in the door. And, you know, that's where we are with our system. It's not a perfect system by any stretch, but we've always found that improving it is really hard to do.
A reminder for our listeners, we're talking about the Western Wisconsin dairy industry, and, of course, it's much broader than this, but the dairy industry has faced some real challenges in the last number of years. We've heard 4 years. And even before that, it was never smooth sailing, as anyone that's paid attention to agriculture knows. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. If you've got questions or comments for our guests, we have some experts on with us right now. Joe Brager is a Buffalo County farmer and member of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation Board of Directors. Mark Hagedorn is UW Extension Ag Agent for Eau Claire County. And Mark Stevenson is with us for just a bit more. He is the Director of Dairy Policy Analysis at UW-Madison, 1-800-228-5615. I look to industries like the cranberry industry, and I did some stories about that last year, and they have gone to the federal government and asked for, and I believe they received, permission to withhold 25% of their crop. And also you'd see, you know, commodities, USDA would buy up some commodities and use them for basically the low-income commodity folks and or the different programs. So if that can happen with cranberries, can it happen with, can dairy farmers go to the USDA, say, we would like to withhold a quarter of all of our product in order to stabilize the market? Is that not possible, or is it not feasible?
Well, I would jump in and say it's interesting you bring that up. This December, every year, Wisconsin Farm Bureau has annual meeting, and over 240 delegates from around the state gathered to discuss and vote on exactly something like that. The discussion of supply management was advanced, and after about an hour of really good and robust discussion, they put language in place. We are willing to consider a dairy supply management system. For the organization, historically has always been a free market, very strong free market supporters. But I believe the delegates wanted all options on the table. That's the message to take away from this, that all options need to be considered, looked at, and possibly not even just model it after somebody else. Make it unique to the U.S. and maybe take some responsibility in managing that supply. A lot of discussion will have to go on, and maybe some of our other guests can weigh in, but the door is now possibly open.
That's very interesting. Mark Stevenson, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, we know that there are countries that have different kinds of supply management systems. Our neighbors to the north, Canada, does. And it can be effective. There's no question about it. If you restrict the amount of milk that gets to the marketplace, you can keep prices much higher. But if you do that, there has to be a lot of restrictions in place. So the state of Wisconsin, for example, couldn't decide to do that because we would be inundated with milk from outside the state. It has to be done at a national level. And if you're going to do it at a national level, you also have to be very restrictive in the amount of imports of dairy products that you allow in, or the program falls apart as well. So it's possible to do, but I think it's going to be a difficult thing to pass, which is not to say that there aren't some versions of that program that can be a little softer than a Canadian system. That certainly might help moderate these prices when we get into these deep downturns.
Mark Hagedorn, I was going to say, the Canadian system, didn't that cause some strain for farmers that were part of that were selling product to Grassland Dairy, because the Canadian system kind of supposedly blocked some of our milk from getting over the border?
Several months ago, there was a a significant hiccup in the system because we ran into some issues of what type, kinds, and varieties of commodities could go back and forth across the border. And Mark Stevenson can give you a really detailed breakdown on that. I was going to reflect a minute. States of Arizona and California have in the past had quota systems in place. When I got out of college, albeit many, many years ago, quota was issued to dairy farmers in the state of Arizona, and it was also in play in California. The largest challenge they ran into was it was just those two states. And unless you're able to get an all buy-in deal and total support across the entire spectrum, it's going to crumble around you, because a lot of dairy farmers from both states sold their quota to neighbors so they could get Class 1 for their milk. Then they took the money that they got from the sale of the quota and moved to Kansas or Idaho or Nebraska or Western Texas, built dairies, moved their cows, and increase size by 30% or 40%.
Sure.
And I think in a nutshell say we're probably our own worst enemies when it comes to this particular aspect of things, because we've gotten so good at producing milk.
Absolutely.
And we keep educating ourselves and figuring out new methods and methodologies, technologies to be more efficient. And it's a good thing, but with that said, it's also a bad thing.
With us, let's take our first caller, and then we'll have to bid adieu to Mark Stevenson. We go to Ashton, Minnesota. Dennis, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you. A couple concerns. I was on the Agricultural Staff Committee for Minnesota Senate a while back, and back then the thing was importing of palm oil to bring prices down. And, you know, palm oil is not looking to be too healthy of a product. I can't see why we can't cut back on that as a substitute to dairy. But secondly, probably more relevant, farmers are telling me, you know, with this bovine growth hormone that came on, the bones are getting weak, and the cows can hardly keep their back legs together. I mean, this is what is going on with this technology.
Gotcha.
Overproduction for what? In by what means, you know.
Sure. Thanks so much for that, Dennis. Joe wants to chime in here. Joe Brager.
Well, as a dairy farmer, I can tell you, and as also from Wisconsin Farm Bureau, we're working very hard to clear up these definitions of milk that are out there. When you pick up a jug of almond milk, you know, just from a safety standpoint, we have concerns because people have allergies. Is it nut-based? Is it milk-based? Allergies from both sides, and we want clarification so that the term milk comes from lactating a mammal.
Sure.
To clear that up. And so a lot of effort is going on. I'm not sure right now. I think at that part, some of that has to be straightened out by FDA and USDA to get those clarifications. But the rules are on the books. They just haven't been enforced. On the issue of Posilac, by and large, I would say Posilac is all but gone as far as use in the United States.
That's the growth hormone.
That's yeah. And that's you can be pretty comfortable that that's used very little. There was probably a couple years ago here, going on a little over a year, major push. Some of the last companies put out requests to the farmers. I can't ship milk anymore if I use it. So we're actually restricted by the processors. There was some hope, maybe perhaps, you know, that that not being on the market would bring down production. But as was mentioned earlier, we are so good at producing milk and so efficient that that's becoming part of the real challenge here. The margins are getting squeezed tighter and tighter. And so one of the things that people say is, well, when times are good, farmers milk more cows. When times are bad, they milk even more, because if you're only capturing a little bit of that margin, you can only become so efficient, and at some point you need to grow.
Right.
And that's part of what's driving growth. So I want our caller to know that as far as growth hormone, that has pretty much gone.
All right. Thanks for that call, Dennis. And we're going to have to let Mark Stevenson go, because I believe he's in the middle of a meeting. So thank you so much for stepping out and joining us for the first half of our program. Mark Stevenson, anything else you'd like to add?
No, I wish you well with the conversation, because it's complicated. You know, I will tell you that when we talk about our ability to export, it's not just what we're producing in this country. It's also what our competitors for those world markets are producing. And in the last couple of years, the European Union has had very strong increases in milk production, most of which has been exported, and that's caused some downward pressure. This year, early good start to a country like New Zealand as a major exporter has put more milk and dairy products on the market, too. So It's the collective of all of us working in those areas.
Which makes any solution all the more challenging and it has to be very nuanced, I'm sure. So, Mark Stevenson, thank you so much for joining us. Mark is the Director of Dairy Policy Analysis at UW-Madison. He conducts research there and works with the entire state's dairy industry. Mark Stevenson, thank you so much. It's time for our first break. Today on the West Side, we're considering past, present, and future of the dairy industry in western Wisconsin and the state as a whole. We were just joined by UW-Madison Director of Policy Analysis, Mark Stevenson. Still with us for the rest of the hour is Joe Brager of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and Mark Hagedorn of UW Extension in Eau Claire County. We also had reached out to Brittany Olson of Wisconsin Farmers Union, but she was unable to join us today. Brittany, if you're out there, if you hear this, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. That goes for all of our listeners. We would love to have you in on this conversation. 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side.
There are 54,000 individuals and families who contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to their investment, you can hear your favorite programs and discover new ones all over Wisconsin and beyond. Thank you. Wisconsin Public Radio brings you thoughtful and engaging discussions every day. Authors, artists, politicians, and voices from around the state. You'll hear them all, and you can be part of the conversation too, on air or online at WPR.org.
Welcome back to the West Side. This hour we're talking dairy farming, production labor prices, trade and more with Joe Brager of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and Mark Hagedorn of UW Extension. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. It's a a big topic. Dairy farmers in Wisconsin have been dealing with some real challenges over the past few years, especially, well, 2017 saw a record number of foreclosures in agriculture in general, and then we saw that at the end of 2018 there was a report showing that a record percentage of dairy farms had been shuttered. So the phone lines are filling up. Let's go to our next caller. This is Noah in Rice Lake. Noah, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just I missed Mark Stevenson, I guess, but
well, we still
wanted to make a comment on the federal order minimum prices that are paid. It's not exactly just that, because co-ops are exempt from paying the minimum price.
Okay.
The co-op where I ship my milk to has been averaging between $1 to $2 below the federal price for the last couple of years.
All right.
So I guess I just wanted to point that out as well. There's a wide range of prices paid to different people depending on where they're shipping their milk to. It's not just the federal minimum price. So.
Awesome. Well, that's a good point to make, and thanks for that clarification. Joe Brager, you have any input on that?
The caller is correct. Under Kaper-Vostad, which was the act that actually allowed co-ops to form, at one time farmers were not able to form together to create co-ops to market milk, and they felt the processors had too much control. So Kaper-Vostad opened that up. Co-ops, by definition, because they're farmer-owned, the farmers, through their boards, through whatever, can elect to pay themselves less than the federal order. A private company that's privately held is required to pay the minimum federal order. So that's, there is differences, and a lot of people have experienced up to $1 a hundredweight less in certain places. There's a lot going on right now. Again, if we talk about the supply out there, co-ops have reined, you know, there have been, we talked about supply management or quota before. We have some of the organic, I believe the largest organic co-op in the U.S. here in Wisconsin. When they need to, they put on some supply management. They'll enact quota. When there's more demand for milk, they'll relax that. And individual co-ops have had some of those experiences this year where they've asked some members, you can't expand beyond maybe a three-year rolling average or whatever. But there's a lot of things going on. We talked about the erosion of premiums. Very difficult for farmers.
And I'm still having trouble understanding that. That means if your product is it's a very targeted niche kind of a market?
Well, now, depending. Now, if you look into the conventional market, we have different premiums. Volume premiums was one that co-ops used to use to compete for customers, so you get a little more if you had more volume. You have certain quality factors that'll qualify you for more premium. And ultimately, the big one that hit a lot of farmers was what they call now the true cost of hauling. You know, you got the price of milk before, and then you paid some hauling. I'll give you an example for myself. I think I paid around $4,200 to haul my milk.
Mm-hmm.
Once the true cost of hauling, you're sitting down now, hold on, because it came to $42,000 a year. That much of a jump. Absolutely. That is huge. I mean, and that came in a letter around Christmas time, I believe, Merry Christmas. That's a hard one to take. How do you budget for that? There was no anticipation. So beyond the price of milk, farmers have really gotten hit with what we call an erosion of that premium structure, and it's really put a big dent. And Mark, if you want to follow up.
Yeah, I'd never heard that. That's a huge jump. And I do hear that in general, input costs are on the rise, and I guess that's about as old as time, that they always tend to go up over the long term.
It fluctuates in the same cyclical fashion that milk prices do. It seems like the challenge is when milk is at a low cycle, grain will be at a high, and when grain's at a high, you catch my drift.
Yeah.
At this particular point in time, it's just sort of dour straight across the industry. Corn prices are down, bean prices are down, and all of this feathers into cost of production. But with that said, it still costs X number of dollars to produce a hundredweight of milk, predicated on your facilities and your labor and equipment. Joe alluded to erosion in milk check. It used to be that somatic cell count was one of the big drivers in milk quality premiums, and I mean rightly so. We as producers and ag service providers should advocate a high quality product, and the premiums that used to be received for somatic cell count have diminished considerably over the years.
Can I jump in? What does that mean?
Somatic cell count is basically the quality of the milk coming from the cow into the tank.
Okay.
And the healthier the cow, the less constraints it'll be necessary to homogenize, pasteurize, all of these things. Better cheese yield from higher quality milk. So we're seeing farmers straight across the board doing a better job. And with this being removed from the equation or decreased in the equation, there's less of an opportunity for a premium there. The one thing that we're probably still seeing a bit of a saving grace from is protein and butter fat. If you're able to keep those component numbers up a little bit higher than average, there's some money to be made there. But it's an ever-changing market, and I think the aspect of it that we probably have to continue to become more proficient with and as producers and managers is risk management. And the Farm Bill has been signed, and there's some new tweaks and twists to the Dairy Margin Protection Program, some new spin on revenue protection. We've still got livestock gross margin. You know, we hear of crop insurance with corn and soybean producers. We have these safety net tools that dairy producers can use. So we're going to have to become more aware of just exactly what the ins and outs and the nuances of them are there.
You brought up the Farm Bill. There's plenty to talk about in that. But first, we've got a caller that's been on the line. Brad in Osseo, you're on the air. Are you still there, Brad?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I guess just following up with what Joel has been saying about supply management. As a younger dairyman, I guess my view on supply management, I guess, would be I think that should be something we should take a look at and try to enforce. And that might, you know, maybe be more sustainable, so we know, or I know, that my future as a dairyman will be more sustainable if we have some supply management, not the roller coaster we've been on the past 3 years that has basically been on a downward slope.
So let me ask you, what has it been like? I mean, just for you personally, I mean, you mentioned the roller coaster, and I can't even imagine, because, you know, we've all got our roller coasters in life, but it seems like a real wild ride for people in agriculture and dairy in particular.
Correct. Yes, I started when I was 19. I bought the cows and personal property on the sixth generation here on the homestead. So that's, you know, kind of all in all, kind of a big feat to carry on the torch and whatnot. And, you know, the first few years were good and whatnot. And I stuck a lot of that money back into the farm with updates. And now it's kind of coming back to the cash flow is really struggling right now to maintain, and for the future, I would like to see a little bump come up in the milk check to know that this is something I still want to do and raise a family on.
Definitely. Well, thanks so much, Brad. We appreciate the call, and best of luck to you. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. So the Farm Bill has some price guarantees in it, because I know that was a big major negotiating point in a prior Farm Bills, but what does it have, Joe Brager?
Well, what I want to stress for the listeners is really not so much price guarantees, but as Mark mentioned, opportunities to cover some risk. One of the programs that had been in place for quite some time was MPP, which is the Milk Margin Protection Program. When that was put in with the last Farm Bill, it didn't quite work out the way folks had hoped. And what it would do, we talk about inputs and so forth, but it's a calculation done on the cost of feed, inputs, and then also the price of milk. So it gives a farmer the opportunity to maybe insure against that margin in there. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what happened under the old program, because the name's been changed and it's been revamped, that's one of the good things that happened here, is it actually farmers paid in seven times what they got back. So it was not a very good program. Many farmers asked for the removal of the program.
I remember that.
With a lot of good discussion, modifications to the program came in place. There's higher coverage levels. Farmers are very responsible people. They want to take action to insure. We're all familiar with auto insurance and so forth. Farmers have a long time had a tool available to them, and this is going to be a new tool for dairy farmers. Crop farmers have had crop insurance. You insure against hail. You can insure somewhat against markets and so forth. And the government does help out and does subsidize some of that to make it affordable. Now we have Dairy RP, which is Dairy Revenue Protection, which will work very similar to crop insurance. So another tool to put in. Right now, of course, we're at a real low point in prices. I just saw $13.85, I think, for a base. A lot of farmers will tell you that you go back in time, there were 25 years ago, you might have got $13 for your milk. So when you look at how things have expanded over time, but when you get out in the future, still not a great price considering the 4 year downturn. You know, if you talk roller coaster, there should be a valley, but the lower the valley, the higher the peak needs to be for guys to come back out of this. But there is a little relief. I wouldn't say huge, but there's some $16 opportunity to insure against some milk price. So there's some opportunity coming up. But there is, I think people are understanding that there's an urgency out in the countryside that something needs to be done.
Absolutely. I mean, the urgency is palpable, even for people that are far removed from agriculture. Mark Hagedorn, before we take our final break of the hour, is there a such thing as a break-even price? Because I thought I remember 15 being the break-even, and I know there's a lot of variables, and it's farm by farm, but is there a general standard, and are we below that?
Well, one of those things that we really hammer on as dairy economists is knowing what your cost of production is.
Definitely.
And cost of production is a moving target depending on an individual's set circumstance. But I would say if you're looking for a rule of thumb, that 15, 1550 is usually where a lot of people contend that they can produce 100 weight of milk at. Joe can maybe elaborate a little bit on that as he visits with quite a few dairy farmers also. But, the challenge is as grain and protein prices go up, then up goes your cost of production. A lot of this is driven by just how much debt are you having to service.
Right.
More traditional, established, multi-generation facilities that don't have a lot of debt retirement to deal with are in a position where their cost of production is going to be a little less, but you still have health insurance to deal with. You still have all of your other intrinsic day-to-day operating machinery repairs, these kind of things, and you don't have as much economy of scale. So this is what is having a tendency also to drive the size of herds up across the state and the nation.
With that, let's take our final break. There's still so much more to talk about, and we've only got about 15 minutes. This is the West Side. We're talking about the dairy market in general, but how it's impacting farmers in western Wisconsin. Joining me for the rest of the hour, we've got Joe Brager. He's a Buffalo County dairy farmer and grain farmer, a member of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Mark Hagedorn, UW Extension Ag Agent for Eau Claire County. 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment, we can take comments right up to the end of the hour. So we've got wide open phone lines. We hope to hear from you. This is the West Side.
Whether it's health, education, politics, or the environment, there is a lot to keep track of in the world around us. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Start your mornings with fresh perspectives. Join us on the Ideas Network beginning at 6 for thoughtful discussions on the issues of the day. The Morning Show, weekdays on the Ideas Network or online anytime at WPR.org.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
The 18th annual Scrabble Bee, a project of Literacy Chippewa Valley, will be Thursday, April 18th in the Jam Theater of Eau Claire's Pablo Center. Event, major, game, and tile sponsorships available. All proceeds benefit local literacy programs and services. LiteracyChippewaValley.org.
Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. This hour, we're talking about the ongoing challenges facing dairy farmers in western Wisconsin and the state as a whole at pretty much everywhere in the U.S. Today's guests have broad combined experience in the industry. They are Joe Brager of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and Mark Hagedorn. He's the agriculture agent for UW Extension in Eau Claire County. And we also heard earlier from Mark Stevenson, who is highly regarded in the state. He's the director of dairy policy analysis at UW-Madison. He joined us for the first half hour of this program or so. If you've got a question, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. I want to talk about trade. We see a lot of tweets. We see a lot of news stories about trade. And there was also a big aid package that was put together for farmers. So the biggest kind of a trade battle, I guess, if one were to call it that, seems to be between the U.S. and China. We also saw some spats between the European Union, Mexico, Canada. So the North American Free Trade Agreement, which President Donald Trump had railed against all along through his campaign, is now gone. We've got this thing called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Joe Brager, one of the things in that trade agreement, the governor, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and President Trump said that it would be very good for dairy farmers in Wisconsin because it got rid of some of those blockades that Canada had on importing milk. So is that a step in the right direction?
Well, trade is very important. I mentioned earlier the domestic use of dairy products, trade being about that 15 to just about 18% on average, usually about 15%. But when the trade deal passed with Canada, a lot of people said, hey, this is great for you. You know, they thought I was going to be out buying a new Cadillac. It's the way it sounded. And it disturbed me a little bit because I wanted to understand what that really meant. What did this mean? Because I think there was some misconception of people of what this trade deal meant. Mexico is very important to us. That's actually our largest trading. And then, of course, you mentioned China, and there's huge potential there. But we have to put that into context. And when we take Canada, it's about $631 million of dairy products that we move between the U.S. and Canada. So I'm going to run some numbers past you. I'll do it kind of slow. But we sell milk in hundredweights. That's what we call it, $15 a hundredweight we mentioned before. And that's 100 pounds of milk, okay, the value of 100 pounds. So if you take that $1,631 million, divided by $15 a hundredweight, you get how many hundredweights roughly that would equate to. And then you multiply that by 100 pounds to get actual pounds of milk. And the average dairy cow in Wisconsin milks about 24,300 pounds for her lactation. And so you break that out and divide that number, you're going to get somewhere 163,000 cows. And to anybody listening out there, it sounds like a huge amount. But in Wisconsin, we have 1.27 million cows. The United States has somewhere around 9.4 million cows. So I did a little looking on counties. Kewaunee County, I believe, has 92,000. Marathon County has 61,000. So if you look at that, about, I think in the past, we were just a little above 3%. Mm-hmm. We were able to move into Canada. That's been raised to 3.59. But if you took that 3% range, And I just gave you the numbers of what that came to. That's two counties in Wisconsin and change doing all the dairy trade with Canada. And then if you add in the increase, it could be a large dairy farm in Wisconsin that handles that increase. So I want to let people know that in no way are we saying that, am I saying trade is not important, but I want that to be put into perspective so that people don't get the wrong message that the minute a trade deal is established, the work is done. We have tremendous amount of work to do. We mentioned the misperceptions on what is actually milk and dairy to work with people here. There's a lot going on with milk in schools. For a long time now, we've been unable to serve anything but skim milk, which has driven, since about 2012, has driven a tremendous amount of kids away from drinking milk. They didn't like the flavor, the taste. We're now able to offer flavored and 1% back in schools. And to start driving healthy choices again, that'll do a lot for dairy farmers.
Mark Hagedorn, if these trade deals might not have just an end-all, be-all kind of effect on alleviating this glut of milk and all the other issues, do these trade tensions have anything other to do with agriculture? I mean, has it impacted the cost of feed, for example, or any of the input costs that dairy farmers have faced?
Well, most certainly we've got the cheapest corn in the United States right now that's available across the world. And a lot of that is driven by we aren't able to export as much. The same kind of thing goes for soybeans because China is one of our largest soybean purchasers. Mm-hmm. You start to try to quantify these decreases in certain exported materials and bring that back around as to how much it helps us with purchased feed prices here in the United States. It ends up being a positive, but it's not as large a number as what you would maybe give it credit for.
Sure.
Because we start taking a look at interest rates have been going up just a little bit. That's going to end up overcompensating for probably some of the gains we saw on feed costs. Anyone who's put in an upgrade or a modernized facility, you've got more debt to service there.
Well, and speaking of debt, I'm sorry to interrupt, but are we seeing farmers taking on more and more debt to try to expand in order to kind of get that small sliver and increase their production?
Under some circumstances, we're seeing producers expanding right now. And this is the economy of scale concept coming back in, where we can amortize more expense over a larger number of animals and manage them, milk them, take care of them with less investment per animal. And this is sort of taking us round trip back to where we started, is we have become very good at what we do. And please don't get me wrong, there is a place and there always will be a place in the United States for more traditionally sized dairy farmers, but the driver there is what lifestyle will this size operation support? And that's why we're seeing larger facilities crop up with three or four families where it used to be one. This way someone can go and take a break, have a vacation, go to Disneyland, and then you know that things are being taken care of back home. They're still a family farm, but they just look a lot differently.
Let's take our final call of the day. This goes to Gilman and Kenneth. Are you on the air still, or are you on with us still, Kenneth?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much. We're very close to the top of the hour. What's on your mind today?
Well, I have been a dairy farmer for 40 years, and I've seen all kinds of programs come out of government, and every one of them has been a failure to improve the situation for the farmers. You know, over 25 years ago, the state of Wisconsin was promoting the fact that we have to learn to speak Spanish to deal with our employees, and that's where it's gone. So we've got these huge farms. hiring people that aren't paid as much as maybe what they should be, and we're driving away the small farmers. Now, I see the solution differently than anybody else has seen it before, and that is we are not overproducing milk. What we are doing is over-manufacturing, because as soon as there is a milk product that is put in storage, then it becomes a problem. That drives our price down. So we should not be processing all of this milk that we produce. Instead, we should take an equal percentage of milk from every farm, process it so that it doesn't become a problem to be stored, and drive our price down. You know, I figured this last government program where they were going to give us 12 cents a hundred for half of a year's production, oh, that would give me $240. What can I do with $240 when a couple of months this year I've lost $3,000 compared to last year in 1 month?
Yikes. Kenneth, best of luck to you. Thanks so much. Joe Bragger, thoughts on the on Kenneth's plan?
Well, I'm glad he brought some of that up. One, you know, we talk about that, and we've always heard about the caves, right? Always the caves. So we're getting close to wrap up. Sorry. So what I want to say is there are some provisions for dairy products and milk to be donated. I guess the biggest message I'd like to put out there for any farmers listening is you know, we've got organizations, Wisconsin Farm Bureau, Farmers Union. We've got a lot of good people out there.
You got Mark Hagedorn.
Mark, Extension,
and
please.
Extension agents.
Oh, by all means. And I think we'd be amiss if we wouldn't. And I'll admit firsthand myself, I'm struggling too. And to reach out. Please do not be afraid to reach out to people who can help. Don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to take part in driving policy to making change. But by all means, don't suffer through this time alone. Work with others and those who care about you around you. So reach out.
And the final positive note is it's still a good, I mean, you still enjoy the lifestyle? You still?
I still love farming. It's definitely been tested this year and the last few years, but I wouldn't be here if it weren't the case. So, you know, let's work together, everyone.
All right. With that, thank you both. That's our time. I want to thank our guests, Mark Stevenson, Joe Bragger, and Mark Hagedorn. It was a great discussion. Mark Stevenson is the UW-Madison Director of Dairy Policy Analysis, and who joined us by phone. Joe Bragger is with the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Mark Hagedorn is the UW Extension Agriculture Agent for Eau Claire County. Thank you all so much. And also, thanks for the great calls. That was very interesting. I'm Rich Kramer. Tune in next week for a look at rural health care in our region. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.